This is the Aftermarket Radio Network.
Welcome to another episode of Business by the Numbers. I'm your host, Hunt Emrys, CPA with Parmelis & Associates. I've been working with a couple of my clients recently, either trying to refinance some debt, sell their shops, help a buyer get financing for selling the shop, or getting new mortgages. Obviously, tax time, a lot of people are waiting for those tax returns to do their mortgages and stuff like that. I feel like that getting a bank loan is such an arduous process, almost by design. Doesn't seem like that the bank doesn't really want to tell you how they pick loans, what you should say, what you shouldn't say. Well, I think so. That's exactly what we're going to talk about this week. Before we get into that, I just wanted to stop and say thank you to you and the rest of the dedicated listeners. Hopefully, you were able to check out our mailbox episode that we did about 3 or 4 weeks back, where I went down through a couple different listener questions that I think other people should hear. Just a reminder, if you have a question, not only should you reach out and be happy to help you and try and point you in the right direction, but it's probably a question that other people are wondering too, and that's where half these episode ideas come from. Thank you. And lastly, cannot forget our dedicated sponsors, NapaTrax and Promotive, for being loyal supporters of the show. If you need a new shop management software, if you need to recruit the right person for your team, please reach out to them and let them know that we sent you there. Hey, did you know NapaTrax is on-site training plus 6 days a week support? It all starts when a local representative meets with you to learn about your business and how you run it. After all, it's your shop, so it's your choice. Let us prove to you that Trax is the single best shop management system in the business. Visit them online at napatrax.com. That's NAPATRACS.com. Are you tired of writing ads that don't generate one good candidate? Introducing Promotive, a full-service staffing solution for your auto repair shop. Go beyond the job boards and let them find your next rock star. They do all the heavy lifting for you. Visit them online at gopromotive.com. First, this week, we got a quick market update, and then I want to get into the most interesting of those stories and what everyone can learn from it, or what I learned from it. And before we finish up, I will go through some rapid-fire tips, or I guess words of caution when getting a loan, line of credit, or a mortgage. And really, that's kind of a little bonus segment. When I went down through here, was kind of taking my notes and stuff, there's a couple pieces I was like, oh, I usually tell people that, but didn't really fit in with these other things. At the end here, it'll reward you guys for sticking it out and get through some things where, yeah, maybe you know, maybe you don't know. Let's get into this. First, let's talk about the market update. I don't want to get into the Federal Reserve. We did have a meeting here. Long story short, the Federal Reserve has remained the interest rates unchanged for several months now. What is it going to do for the rest of the year? Are they going to cut rates? I mean, that part about this is actually kind of interesting and it's really flipped. But like I said, not going to get into that today. Really, the only thing that we need to remember here is that the rates are massively high. Yeah, they're the highest that they've been in a very long time. They're the highest they've been in my lifetime. And honestly, for most of the people listening, there's only one period of anyone, I'm not sure, I guess I shouldn't underestimate the age of my listeners, but most of you guys listening, if you were alive, early 80s is the only time that we've ever seen interest rates that high. I know that I was talking to my dad about this, and his first mortgage in Baltimore, I think was 82, 83, something like that. It was like 15%. He was trying to commiserate. I was like, Dan, a little bit different. I think you bought that house for $40,000. 14% on 40 grand doesn't sound as bad compared to around here, a starter house is 600,000 at 8% interest or so. Yeah, it's crazy. Not only for the individual space, and we had Pat on a couple of weeks ago to talk mortgages and stuff like that, where obviously that is what's making the news. Everyone or most common type of loan that people are getting of that size is going to be a mortgage. But obviously everyone here and listening is familiar with the struggles of this, even on the commercial side of it. Rates have really been all over the place. It's only probably the last 3 or 4 months that I've seen somewhere I went, that's not as bad as I thought. It seems like for all of 2023, it was just, whoa, yeah, that's high, but I'm not sure what I was expecting, but rates of 8%, 9%, what do we have recently? And this is where it gets strange, is recently, within the last month, and even like when I mentioned before that I'm working on a couple of clients with these deals, even those rates are all over the place. But within the last month, I think that the lowest that I've seen was like 7.5% for a long-term fixed rate. And then the highest one that I saw was a variable rate, but at the current spot, I think it was almost 11% or at 11%. And that's really just that in itself is one of the strangest things that we're seeing. Before this, for years and years and years, commercial rates would generally hover. I mean, if you're owner-occupied for commercial real estate, there's probably times we saw 4.5, 4.75, some lower, but pretty rare. But, you know, conventional 5, 6%, really, really similar. Like if you were doing three deals within 3 months, those rates would probably be identical. Compared to now, like I said, I mean, some of these rates are 3, 4 points off. Crazy, crazy differences. Why is that happening? One of the big reasons of why this is happening is those are not all the same products. A conventional loan doesn't really have a ton of similarities to an SBA 7A loan or 504 or something like that. It all has to do with risk and reward. If you go and you put your money in a savings account, you don't feel like it's very risky, and so they don't need to pay you a ton of interest. Compared to if you're going to invest in an early seed stage business, you're looking for a really good return because it's extremely risky. And you as a commercial borrower are no different. If someone came to you and says, hey, I need to borrow $100,000, and you see that they have $3 million in their checking account, probably not going to gouge them that bad on the rate because you're like, you know what? Everything goes bad. I'm still going to be okay. Compare that to someone that wants to borrow the same amount of money and has nothing in a bank account. It's kind of what we're seeing here now of where they are using the rates to kind of judge the riskiness of the note. Where they always kind of did that in the past to a certain degree, it was usually a little bit more of a go or no go. Like, hey, we trust this borrower. We think that they're going to pay them back. And here's what the rates that we do. Or, hey, we don't like this borrower. We're just not going to do a loan. If you were to go to local bank of the Southwest and they looked at their last 50 deals that they did, and this is pre-COVID, I would guarantee that they're probably all getting the same rates. It was like, this is what we lend at. Whereas now, banks are very cautious. We've seen a couple of things in the last year or two there, a couple of banks falter, but the commercial space is really, really messed up now. Specifically, the commercial real estate. If you've read the news, looked at this, $80, $90 million high-rise buildings that are going in short sale for half price. Think about that. Think about all of your friends, maybe even you listening, that have never went back to physically work in the office. The U.S. has such an oversupply of office buildings that this is where a lot of banks are getting very concerned. I know the bank that I bank with here in Maryland, I won't say their names on here. I do like them, right? But I wouldn't want to scare anyone away. But last time I talked to them, they were really not doing any commercial real estate loans for people that were not their current customers. And I was shocked to hear that because commercial real estate in the past has kind of been looked at the exact opposite. That used to be like the gold standard. Well, businesses always need a real estate. People could choose to move or whatever, but commercial side is really sound. And it's kind of flipped because what we've noticed is, hey, nothing is forever and nothing is guaranteed on this. We see changing landscape. The craziest thing about the world that we're living in now is how fast things change. The big idea behind this is banks are just getting a little bit or a lot more picky about deals. In the last 6 months, I've seen more deals get pushed forward or kind of sidestepped than ever in the past. Like I said, we'll talk about that specifically in the story here in a second. The last thing I wanted to kind of talk about for rates is we've seen kind of a mixture of fixed or floating rates. And I thought that I would be remiss if I didn't at least give you some guidance on this of, hey, Anna, if I'm trying to factor something in, what kind of rate would you be factoring? Or is it right to do a fixed or floating rate? First and foremost, get a good banker because a banker is going to be your lifeline. We'll talk about this here in a little bit, but if you don't have a banker that's willing to go to bat for you in underwriting or in committee or something like that, this is where these deals get done, especially if you have a little bit of a weird deal. As far as rates go, if you're looking to buy, let's say that you're renting your building right now and you are in talks to buy that building, what kind of rate would you factor in if you're kind of doing your math and calculations? Since it's commercial real estate, that's going to be looked at better than something like an acquisition. Because when you acquire a shop, you might have $300,000 worth of assets, but you could be paying $1 million for it. So there's not enough collateral for most banks to ever feel fully committed, even though they do like lending to auto repair shops. Commercial real estate, on the other hand, you're buying a building. So if things go south, they still have a tangible asset, even if it does depreciate some. But if you're looking to, hey, I'm renting this space, I'm going to go out and buy it, what is my rate going to be? That one was said, like I had one where it was actually in the sevens, the mid sevens. That is an outlier on it. You might need to shop this around if you don't have a great relationship or have a couple of contacts already. But if I'm doing kind of my calculations here and I am just kind of forecasting, especially going a conservative side of this, I'd probably do around 8.5%. Most of these deals that we've been seeing lately for commercial real estate have been coming between 8% and 9%. If you are in the other side of this and you're like, hey, I'm in acquisition mode, I want to buy some shops, what kind of rate would I be paying? Or maybe the opposite, hey, you want to sell your shop, what kind of rate is your buyer going to be paying? Those ones have been crazy. These are the ones we've seen all over the place. I have seen some lower ones, but all of those were kind of tied in with some real estate deals. So let's say that you're going out to buy a shop and there is no real estate involved on this. If you're going SBA, you're guaranteed to be over 10%. Most of the SBA is going to be prime, which is interest rate target or a standard that you can look up. Like, what is the prime rate today? The prime rate today is 8.5%. And so you might hear prime plus two, prime plus 2.5, and that means prime rate plus 2 points or 2.5 points. I've saw one the other day that was prime plus three, which is that 11.5% I was talking about. But generally for SBA recently, it's been prime plus two, which under current today's standards is 10.5%. Real estate, 8 to 9. Non-real estate, probably double digits. You have a mixture of the two, you'll probably have a mixture of those rates. This stuff changes all the time. One of the good things about being on a variable rate is most argue that we have no idea when they're going to start cutting rates, but there's really no more room for them to increase this. Famous last words, but there's really only one place for this to go, and it's going to be down. If I'm looking at a fixed or floating and both of them the same rate, I'm probably going to pick the floating rate because that means as these rates start to drop, so will my payment. I will not need to refinance to lower down my rate. But generally, what's going to happen is if you were to look at a deal, if we do fixed, it's going to be at 8% for the life of the loan. If we do floating, it's going to be at 8.5% today, but it has a possibility of going down. There's like a kind of a small gap right there. I'm probably going to go floating knowing that I might be at this point in 6, 9, 12 months, but probably not that much longer. If you go with the fixed rate, you're almost guaranteeing that over the next 2 to 5 years, you're going to be refinancing this loan. Personal preference on it, if you want to just be done with it and do the variable with, ultimately, you probably have to refinance that at a later date anyways, but you probably won't have to think about it as soon as you were going to do a fixed rate. But you don't want to worry about fluctuations. You want to know what your payment is, never going to change. Fixed rate is right for you. But like I said, talk to your banker. They can explain ins, outs, what works, what doesn't, and all that in between. Let's get into this story that I was teasing you guys about, and then we'll get into those quick hits like I was talking about. Names, identity, and slight story to protect the innocent here, but we'll give you kind of the cliff notes of this deal. A couple years ago, I was working with this client. He's been thinking about selling to a key employee, did a valuation for him, been kind of going back and forth with his key employee, negotiating the sale. Long story short, price has been agreed on, format, timing, all that stuff. So now the fun part starts. Client wants to sell the shop. He needs to find a way to get his buyer some financing, or the buyer is actually looking for some financing. That now involves my client because they're going to want to see the business, want to see if the business can support the debt, all kinds of stuff like that. Obviously, I don't want to get into specific details of this, even though you wouldn't necessarily know who this is. And the numbers really aren't important here per se. And what came out of it is a couple of things that I think would be very helpful for anyone getting a loan, and specifically if you are going to be in this position soon, either on the buyer side or the seller side. The one thing on here is the income had been really up or down for the last couple of years. Not crazy, like as in, hey, they were making good money and then losing a ton of money. No, they've been profitable in all these years, but some of them really profitable, some of them not as, some of them really profitable, some of them not as, and really kind of some of these top line sales all over the place. I will be honest with you that if I was to look at a business and you see volatility of income and volatility of sales, the sales side might be a little bit more unnatural for the automotive industry because generally sales are either pretty consistent, they're growing, and if you're really getting out of it, they'll be declining, but you don't see them jump around very much. Income, on the other hand, yeah, it's super, super common, but banks don't like to see that. Remember, banks like to lend money to people that have money, not people that need money. Unfortunately, most people that go to banks are the ones that need money, not have money. It's kind of an oxymoron, but what it's saying there is a bank wants a perfect situation. And a lot of times they're looking for things to just talk themselves out of this deal. It's almost like they come to the table and they've already decided they're not going to do this deal. We're trying to sell it to them of why they should and why it's going to be a good investment. Even The profit obviously is going to affect the cash flow, and so that's going to be a legitimate concern of the bank. But the income going up and down can sometimes be just as much of a concern, and in cases I've seen before, even more of a concern. Like I said, I was going to give you guys some tips on what to take out of this. Income up and down, sales up and down. Hey, does that sound like your shop on it? The biggest thing that you're going to have is you're going to have a reason behind this. This is probably going to be a valid thing, not only for a bank, but if you're going to sell your shop, a prospective buyer is going to want to know the same questions too. What happened this year? What happened that year? What happened here? Could be something very common. Well, hey, you know what? We had a terrible accident. We actually had to shut the shop down for a month. And then in this year, we lost one of our key technicians, and then our service advisor had a baby and was out for half the year. If you kind of set a story like that, and some of you might be thinking, whoa, wait, that happened to my shop last year. Any shop owner is going to be like, okay, yeah, that makes sense. You guys have 6, 8, 15 employees there. If you lose one or two kind of suddenly, then yeah, it's going to have effect on sales and probably profitability as well. So no buyer is probably going to be scared away by that, but a bank will be, right? Banks want to see these perfect stories. Nothing ever goes wrong. It's consistent. That's just not realistically how the world works. Let's face it, your shop management system is the single most important tool in your shop, period. You need NapaTrax because it integrates with all the major players, including Napa ProLink, PartsTech, OE RepairLink, Epicor, TireConnect, Mitchell 1 ProDemand, and more. NapaTrax has leading-edge tools and technology that your shop needs right now. Unlike the other guys, we'll be there after your installation with the best training and support in the business. Your training includes a learning management system that is tailored to each role in your company. Simply put, Trax was designed and built for shop owners just like you. It all starts when a local representative meets with you to learn about your business to help optimize your shop's workflow, efficiency, and profitability. For over 30 years, NapaTrax has made selecting the right shop management system easy by offering the best, most comprehensive SMS in the industry. After all, it's your shop, so it's your choice. Visit us on the web at napatrax.com. That's NapaTrax.com. Shop owners, are you struggling to find and retain top-tier talent for your automotive shop? Introducing Promotive, on the web at gopromotive.com. With over 40 years of combined industry recruiting experience, we're the ultimate staffing solution. We go beyond traditional agencies. Our team provides dedicated recruiters and account managers advising on processes, compensation, and benefits. We focus on placing technicians and service advisors with shops that offer the best culture, training, and long-term growth opportunities. Trust our experience to match the right talent to your shop. We carefully select shops that value employee excellence and provide an environment for success. Our dedicated team leads the entire process, leveraging our industry knowledge and expertise. Partner with Promotive and experience their advantage to help you build a high-performing team that drives your shop's growth. Visit gopromotive.com today and let us help find and keep the best talent in the industry. Like I said, the income was kind of all over the place a little bit, but the strongest year was not the most recent year. You might be kind of hearing, by the way I'm saying this, the bank actually passed on this deal, but kind of going into a couple of different things that made them a little bit leery. And so the way that this works is most of the stuff that I'm talking about here is not deal breakers, but that's gravy. If the deal kind of is on the fence and some of these like sales are really consistent or sales are trending up, profitability is really consistent, that might be enough to push them over the edge. Versus if the deal is on the fence and some of these kind of kicker things don't look as good, it might kind of pull that deal back or not push it over the finish line. One of the big things that banks like to look at, and I agree with this logic wholeheartedly, is what happened most recently is the most important. If you made $300,000 3 years ago and the last 2 years are okay, a bank is not going to look at that as favorably as someone that had an okay 2 years and then this year they made $300,000. Right? What have you done for me lately? And also, the most recent year is going to be the best representation of probably what your business is now and what it expects to be for the near future. It wasn't terribly bad, but like I said, most recent year was not their best year. The big one came on to probably why this deal didn't kind of get to underwriting and they just kind of passed on it. These two things that we're going to talk about now. Just like any business out there, you know, the shop owner had a really fair valuation on this, and I think a great deal, honestly, if you're looking at it from a industry perspective and people in the know that are really know what they're looking at here. Banks don't always look at it the same way. And the big thing is the add backs. when we evaluate businesses, and we've talked about this a lot before, non-recurring discretionary expenses, i.e. maybe something from your personal life, might sometimes trickle into your business. You've heard me talk about it before that, hey, every business out there is doing this to some degree on it, and banks are aware of that. Prospective buyers are aware of that. Generally, if you see and you're like, you want this much money for it, but your income's only showing 100. Well, I make about 150. I run this and this down through my business. Anyone that's self-employed is like, okay, yeah, I can probably get that. Where it kind of got tricky on this one is he had above average amount of ad backs on this. Like a lot of the cash flow and evaluation was kind of dependent on some of these larger ad backs, and the bank just wasn't going to go for all of them. I really felt that they were being ticky-tacky on this one, and so did the lender that was doing it, who's one that I've worked with a number of times, is an awesome, awesome banker. But really what that shows is really the sign of the times. This is an SBA deal, and generally SBA are not very nitpicky. The reason is because this bank is underwriting the deal. The SBA, meaning the government, is guaranteeing the deal. The bank generally just looks at the very kind of rigid format of these numbers need to look like this, then you have this much cash flow, this much coverage, et cetera, et cetera. If it all checks, they get the loan. It's usually very, very clinical in this stuff. And they were being very subjective, which is not very normal for an SBA note. They weren't looking to lend money to anyone. They were looking for the right deals. In the past, a bank might have accepted 98% of the loans that had qualified. I think that from what I've been seeing out here, it's probably these smaller banks could be in a 20 to 30% range. Super, super selective about which ones they're touching. Some of these bigger boys, probably more like 50-50. Is that going to be like this forever? I don't know, honestly. I mean, the crazy part right now is you would think, wait, wouldn't this be a time if you're a bank that you're lending money like candy because you're getting 10, 11% and yet they're being very, very cautious? What I always say is you follow the money on this. You look at the smart money. If anyone bets on sports, this idea is not very a novel idea at all. You don't want to look at the public money. You want to look at the smart money. Well, if all the public is betting on the Patriots and all of the smart money of the institutional gamblers are betting on someone else, do they know something that the public doesn't? And banks a lot of times are the same way. Banks are not stupid, and banks do one thing, and that is make money, save money, invest money, whatever. And if you see the banks getting nervous, do you think that that should be a clue for someone else? If the banks are scared, we probably should be a little bit too. When, how, why? Who knows? Maybe it's going to be the eclipse that's coming tomorrow. And by the way, if you've talking to this now, then we all survived the eclipse. I didn't even know it was something we were supposed to be worried about. And then you see the stuff on the news. It's like, guys, I'm pretty sure this has happened a couple of times and we all survived. But you know what? That's the world today. Getting back to this story on it, this next one was officially from my banker, what killed the deal. When you go to get a bank loan, and there are ways to do this without involving your personal credit on it, they are much, 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 much harder to do than you might think or someone told you on the internet. I would say for every 10 bank loans that come through, 10 of them have a personal guarantee or they've ran your personal credit. It's like that uncommon that I can only see a handful of times of very, very, very well-established businesses that have truly been able to get loans irregardless or like completely separate from their personal credit guarantees or anything like that. What happened in this deal is they finally ran, I'm not sure why they didn't do this before. I was kind of confused because we went back and forth. We talked to underwriting to a certain extent on it. And then the personal credit issue came back. It's like, guys, you knew this. I don't know. There's a little bit more to that. Or maybe they just didn't think about it and they thought the credit would be good because a client said it was. Trust but verify. Anyways, came back and this guy's credit was like 625. If you looked at the credit report, there was no delinquencies, there was no late on it, but he didn't have much credit on it and was utilizing it. And so if you were to look at how much debt he has, if you compare it to the average American, it was pennies. He just didn't have that much debt. One of the big things that affects your credit score is credit utilization. It would look much better if you owed $30,000 on credit cards, but your total maximum available credit is 200. Than if you had $10,000 outstanding balance and your max credit is only $12,000. Because what they're looking at is they're looking to say, hey, does this person have liquidity? If things get tough, do they have access to credit or access to capital in order to pay our debt? And for this person of having a low credit score and also not having access to liquid cash made them too nervous and they said, we're going to pass on this deal. This banker, he actually referred us to another bank that he thinks will do this one that is not as picky right now, because even he was getting kind of frustrated with his underwriting that he sent a couple of really good deals to them and they just didn't want them. He's like, it's hard. He's a relationship banker. And he's like, I go to my clients trust me that follow my guidance and we can go, we can get them lending. And now they're kind of making me out to be a liar. And we see this a lot, and you get the politics on it. The whole thing is just very mysterious because we still never talked to the underwriting team. It never went to committee. It never actually got submitted. They just said, it's not for us. And what are we going to do? Go force them to give us a loan? It doesn't happen that way. And I think ultimately that he'll probably get a deal on this next bank that we go to. Very long-winded way of saying a lot of things there. Be careful with what you're showing on your financials here. We always talk about not running any personal expenses or minimizing personal expenses, especially if you plan to sell in the next couple of years on this. Also, the big thing that probably came out of this one is probably should have been doing this and having this conversation 6 months or a year ago. What I always tell people is if you are planning to sell your shop to someone, especially a key employee, and you're like, all right, here we are in April of 2024. At the end of 2024, January 1 of 25, I'm going to sell my shop to Stevie. Already had that conversation with the bank. Get him to run his credit. Get him to do all of this stuff so that you know what's going on. Like for this situation we were talking about before, the personal credit, if he does a couple of different strategies, probably within the next 4 months, his credit's going to be in the 700s and he'll be fine. The big thing from what I've heard a lot of people is like 660 is kind of the minimum. If you're at 700 or 750, you're probably going to get the exact same rate. But if you're below 660, they're just not going to touch it. The personal credit issues has probably been the number one issue that has knocked out borrowers from what I've seen. Generally, it's a lot more egregious stuff like, hey, you had previously defaulted on a loan from that bank. Yeah, they don't generally forgive and forget. File bankruptcy, short sales, and stuff like that. The business not cash flowing because of the ad backs, really have never seen that before. But what I have seen a lot is banks give reasons because they don't just want to say, you know what, we just don't really want this note. They'll give you a specific reason on it and you look at it and you're like, that's not really the reason. You just don't want this. Some of that is caused by the legal side of it. Not that this was the case whatsoever, but they have fair lending standards. They can't be accused of doing anything discriminatory. Generally, they'll give you a financial reason of why they're not doing the deal. Whether that's a true reason or not, probably half truth most of the time. Before we get out of here, let's go into those quick hits like I was talking about of a couple different things that I think that you should be aware of or little things to just keep in mind in the future. The first one is getting liquid. Like I said, banks are nervous. Who knows what's going on right now? And maybe you are sitting here thinking to yourself, you know what, Hunt? I wish I would have a little bit more money in my bank. Or like you were talking about before, have a little bit more access to some liquid cash. Maybe you got some money, maybe you got some assets, it's just tied up. My favorite thing is a line of credit. Whether you want to just go get a business line of credit or you want to pull a line of credit against a piece of real estate, whether personal or commercial, lines of credit are the best thing that you can do to have a little bit of a safety blanket. Why? Because you have access to capital and you don't have to pay interest unless you need it. If you want to go out and you want to get a $100,000 line of credit right now, probably going to cost you about $1,000 to do. But if you never need to touch it, that is the only money you'll ever spend on that. You only pay interest when you draw off of it. Versus if you go out and you get $100,000 like the EIDL, yeah, you're going to be paying interest no matter if you use it or if it's just sitting in a bank account. I have a little bit more on EIDL, but we're going to save that one for the last here. The big thing about going to get a line of credit is if you have a piece of commercial real estate, you don't, or even your mortgage on your primary residence, you don't really need a reason. I'd like to get a line of credit. Oh, why? Oh, I just want to kind of pull some of the equity out. It's worth about $1 million. I only owe you guys $400,000. So I was looking to pull like $200,000 out. Depending on who the bank is, they usually lend like 75% to 85% of the value. So if our house is worth $1 million, probably give you up to $750,000. Meaning if you owe them $500,000, they'll give you $250,000 or so on a line of credit. Personal lines of credits on mortgages is becoming a little bit harder to get. Most of the big boys don't do this anymore. If you're looking to get one, I always say go to whoever has your mortgage. That's going to be the easiest ones and sometimes even instantaneously. If you are looking for a commercial real estate line of credit, again, go to the mortgage. If you're going to get a true just business line of credit, biggest thing here is you need a reason. If you're behind on taxes and you want to get a line of credit to pay it off, it's a great idea, but do not ever tell the bank that's the reason. They don't like to give a line of credit for something that they knew is not going to be used for kind of a short-term in and out type procedure. If you want to refinance a debt from a previous owner, do not tell the bank that. What you should tell the bank is a couple of things. Hey, you know what? I need a line of credit because I'm looking in to get a new product line. I already sell tires and I want to start stocking wheels. And I'm probably going to spend about $100,000 and just need some access to more capital. Or maybe you don't sell tires now. Maybe you want to get into tires. Maybe you want to get into engines. Maybe you want to get into transmissions. But anything, you need to buy inventory. Banks generally like to hear this because if you get inventory, they have hard collateral. And also inventory comes, goes, and so they'll see that line go up and down. Once you get a line of credit, you can do whatever the heck you want with it. You didn't guarantee them. No, I'm not advocating that you go in there and give them a receipt for all of these tires that you have no plan on buying. You said you're thinking about it. You might buy some wheels. You're thinking about buying some tires and it'll probably be like $100,000. Biggest thing here is you got to have a reason. They don't want you to just have access to it because the biggest thing that they don't want to do is give it to you and not use it. Lastly on that, if you do get a line of credit, use it every once in a while, draw off of it, pay it off. It looks even better if you can pay some interest on it. Yeah, don't run thousands of dollars on it, but hey, maybe you might slip up and leave $400 balance on there for 1 month and give them their $8 of interest. If you're using that up and down, they're less likely to term that out or close it out at some point. Next one on here, getting a mortgage. Getting a mortgage if you're self-employed can be a little bit tricky. Again, the big thing here is get a good mortgage person. Don't just go out to anyone. Talk to your friends, especially talk to people that are familiar with self-employed people. Like I said before, I have my buddy Pat on here who does mortgages here in Maryland. So if you need a mortgage here in Maryland, give him a shout, Pat McCormick. If you're across the country on it, I've talked to a lot of mortgage bankers that really understand their stuff. And a lot of people have obviously never dealt with a self-employed person, and it shows. The big thing that you need to know of self-employed is it makes your getting a mortgage a lot more complicated. And you need to have that expert like we talked about. And one of the big things here that a lot of people are surprised is you need to be self-employed 2 years with 2 years of tax returns in order to generally get a mortgage on this. If you're looking at buying that shop that you're working at right come January, but you're also thinking about moving and buying a new house next year on it, you better think again, because as soon as they find out you're self-employed, they're not going to touch this until they can see 2 years of tax returns. Again, just like we were talking about before with the acquisition story, talk to the mortgage banker before you do this stuff, long before. It's going to be a very bad conversation to have with your spouse when you pick that dream house. You got to break the news to them that it probably won't be there in 13 months or whenever you're going to be able to submit that second tax return. Last one on here is, well, two things, but taxes, taxes, taxes. All of this stuff goes off a tax return. They will look at interim financials. They will look at different stuff. They have become so strict because they kind of messed around with some stuff back earlier in 2007, 2008 timeframe, that if it says it on a tax return, it's good. If it doesn't say on a tax return, there's not a whole lot that they can do. It's great your interim financials look good, but then you make it all go away when you do the taxes. Interim financials don't mean anything for a mortgage. And lastly on this, if you are planning to take those tax returns that your accountant is preparing you to your mortgage banker on there, let them know that you are doing so. Period. End of story. If you're nervous that you're not going to qualify for this house and you did not tell your accountant, you might be in a little bit of trouble here. The reason is I am not saying that if my clients come and tell me that we need to show $200,000 of income that I'm cooking the books. No, absolutely not. And I'm not even joking on that whatsoever. That is so highly illegal and it's just not something that I really know anyone that touches. But what a lot of people don't realize is there's a lot of different ways that you can say the same thing on tax returns that are all 100% legitimate that are going to be looked at completely different by that mortgage banker. In the past, this was not as important because I could go and I could sit down with Pat and be like, oh, hey, I know we put that on this line. This is what this was. And they can actually make adjustments different from what the tax return shows. They're so locked down right now that they say, no, hunt. If it says on the AGI, period, done, end of story, that's the only number that we can use. But one of the things I like to explain to a lot of people is maybe we don't take full depreciation on that. Maybe we depreciate that instead of expensing this stuff. Maybe we count that as inventory instead of counting that as other expense of the year. There's a lot of different things that are all legitimate that you could argue one way or the other on it. But if you don't know what your target is, you don't even know how close or how far you might be. Wouldn't it be very, very upsetting if you literally lost this by a couple hundred dollars? Now, it's not going to happen on it, but I think you get the idea of what we're talking about. And the biggest thing on this is a lot of times when I go through this with clients, it's either one of two things. Yeah, we're good to go. It's not going to be close. Or, hey, we're good to go, but thank you for telling me because I'm probably going to report this a little bit differently, which is going to work. If I wouldn't have known about it, it might not have. And I also have some clients that will tell me, hey, let me know when I get the tax return. And I say, go ask your mortgage banker what you need to show, because I know in the back of my mind, we're not close. And they come back and they say, hey, we need to show this. And it's like, guys, that's three times the number that we're probably going to show on here. There's no sort of massaging that's going to get us there. You need to go and talk to them and see what your options are here. Last one on here before I want to do a quick little FYI PSA announcement on the EIDL loans. A bank passing on a loan is different than getting declined. And I got to be very, very clear about this. If you are going to PNC Bank and you're trying to get a conventional loan, in that case, you don't really probably care that much if it's declined or if the bank just says, no, we don't want to touch it. What does that even mean? What it means is, like the deal we were talking about before, we were not declined. The bank passed on a deal. When a bank starts kind of going down through a deal, sometimes they will give you a term sheet right off the bat. Term sheet means, hey, we're loosely interested in doing this deal. Now we need to do some more research. Other bankers generally wait for that term sheet till the very end. If you get a term sheet on it, it usually means that they're conditionally approving to do the deal. If you don't end up getting it, you are getting declined. If you never get a term sheet and they pass on it, then so be it. Where this is much different is SBA. A good banker is going to look at this, going to kind of underwrite this thing for you before submitting this. Because what they want to do is they want to make sure that you're not going to get declined for an SBA. If you get declined, meaning you went down through, the banker thinks that you qualify for it, you submit this, it goes to underwriting, goes to the SBA, and it comes back declined, there are rules about when you can reapply. They don't want you just coming every single month and getting declined. Some of these programs, depending on when this is, could be 6 months, 12 months, 24 months on it. You really, really want to have a good banker, because not only is a good banker going to look at this and say, hey guys, we're not even going to submit this, it's going to get declined and I don't want to do that. Let's wait till we're in a little bit better position. Or also, like I mentioned before, when it goes to committee and they say, no guys, this is a good deal, and they're going to ask you kind of like a lawyer in deposition, what are we going to say about this down year? How are we going to explain this? What is our path forward in the future? What is our growth plans? What are we doing for advertising? When they're a committee and they're kind of presenting this loan and going to their board of why it's going to be a good loan for them, that they can argue on your behalf. Because I cannot stress how important that piece of this is. For none of my bigger deals or ones that had a little bit more issues with it, none of those would have ever got done if we didn't have a good banker. It was all because someone believed in the deal. They truly believed that it was a good investment on it, and they went to bat for us and ended up working. But I've also seen very good looking deals that I know most other bankers would probably be able to get through the finish line just die because the person working on it either didn't care or just was an idiot. Last one before we wrap up here this week, I have to put a little PSA, and I don't want to be cryptic about this, but this is a developing story. I only really heard about this first on Friday, and then I did a little bit of research on it, and it seems like it is kind of starting. The big kind of precursor to all this, or the big word of caution, do not miss your EIDL payments. If you have missed an EIDL payment, if you have not started making your EIDL payments, start. If you don't know how to start, call the SBA and figure it out. The reason I'm saying this is you guys are probably curious about this, and I probably need to do an episode once we get some more information. There's a lot of people that got these that were wondering if it's going to be forgiven. And even I was kind of wondering if they were going to forgive some of this. I think we might have our answer, and they are not going to forgive any of this stuff. How do I know that? I got a call on Friday from one of our clients, and he said, hey, have you heard of anyone getting their EIDL loan written off and sent to the Treasury Department? And I said, no. I was kind of wondering what they were going to do for non-payment and stuff like that. I did some quick internet research. Reddit is lovely for some of these community updates because you can say, what are other people dealing with? What are other people saying when they get a hold of the Treasury? Because one of the big things is my client was like, I don't even know what this means. If this is good, this is bad, whatever this is, because I can't get anyone on the phone at the Treasury. And when I called the SBA, they said, you need to call the Treasury. What I found out is if you do not pay these loans, and some people said that they had missed 3 payments, some people said they had missed 6 payments, 10 payments, who knows? It's all over the place. But what looks like is going on here is the SBA, they didn't want to do these loans. The government forced them to give out these loans, And they probably said to them, hey, you know what? If the people pay us, then great. If they're not going to pay us, we're getting them off their books. And you guys at the Treasury can track them down. Remember, with the SBA, this was a 30-year note at 3.75% interest. What people have been reporting is that if you have non-payment, if you got missed a couple payments on this or whatever happened, never paid them at all, they are sending this to the Treasury Department. And what happens when it goes to the Treasury Department is you automatically get a 30% kind of hit on top. So if you owe them $1 million and you hadn't paid them, after all the interest had racked up, you owe them $1 million. As soon as that hits the Treasury, you now owe them $1.3 million. They're putting 30% on top of the balance as kind of a penalty, whatever they're going to do, probably a default provision. The next thing that they do is they are supposedly calling these buyers that are interested in paying it back. They put the 30% on top, and I will say that a lot of these people are probably just going to file bankruptcy. How many of these people got these loans, legitimately tried to use them, and their business just didn't survive COVID or the after effects of COVID? Very, very, very common. Those people could have already filed bankruptcy, might be planning to anyways. For the people that either were just asleep behind a wheel, forgot, went through hard times and are getting back through it, they will renegotiate the deal and allow you to pay that back. You are going to be paying 30% more back because they're already going to hit that on the top, but they're also going to increase your interest rate. You were going to be at 3.75% with the SBA. The Treasury is at 8.75%. What that's going to look like, how this is going to happen, it looks like the first that has started happening is late February on it. They're probably going to do this stuff in waves. I hope that it's not the situation that you're in. But like I said, the biggest thing to take out of this, if you have not been making your EIDL payments, try and start tomorrow. Do it now. Most of these payments are not massive because if you don't, it could be very, very, very expensive for you. If you do have any prior knowledge on that, if you have any personal experience, if you see this in the upcoming weeks and you maybe fall into this, one of your friends does, shoot me an email, podcast@parmelis.com. If you have a question about it, or if you say, hey, this is going on, what have you heard on your client that's already going down through this? I would love to share it with you. And then also, this is all for the community. Other people are probably wondering the same thing, so would love to share it with our listeners as well. Please share with friends. If you have any questions, comments, or ideas for future episodes, please shoot me an email at podcast@parmelis.com. Just want to say thanks again for listening on the Aftermarket Radio Network. You can find all shows on the aftermarketradionetwork.com and on your favorite podcast listening apps. So thanks again for joining me on Business by the Numbers. Stay safe out there, and I will talk to you all next week.
You've been listening to Business by the Numbers with Hunt Demarest on the Aftermarket Radio Network. Follow Hunt on your favorite podcast listening app. Let him know what you'd like him to cover. His email is in the show notes. Hunt is all for advancing the aftermarket.